Good morning, good evening, good coding campers. It's Monday, and that means it's time for MSDN Radio, the show that helps developers find what they're looking for. Good code, good conversation, but most of all, good times. So here to bring us into the week is our host, Mike Benkovich.
Okay, I want to welcome everyone back to another week of MSDN Radio. I'm Mike Benkovich. I'm your host this week, and we're going to dive into what's going on with technology in the space out there. And usually, we'll go out to kind of tell you what's going on, but today we've got a guest who actually is the person that I would go to ask what should we be paying attention to. Specifically, we've got Scott Guthrie on the line. Scott, how are you doing?
Great, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
We're glad to have you here. It's going to be a fun show. There's a lot of people out there who are got a lot of questions. The idea of the whole show is that we can get you out here to be able to ask questions and talk, get feedback from what's going on. But before we jump into that, I got a couple things I just wanted to cover. One is the upcoming shows. Next week we've got Steve Fox coming on talking about SharePoint and what we need to know. And then on the week after that, we've got Mark Rasinovich is going to come on and talk about a little bit what Windows and what developers need to be thinking about when you want to really light up your applications. Past shows you can download and listen to on Channel 9. This will be posted up there probably within about 24 hours, so you can go out to channel9.com and search for the tag MSDN Radio, and it'll come up. There's also the registration links for the show, which is tinyurl.com/MSDNRadio-7 for today. You can go out and you can download and get to the recording from today. Today we've got Scott Guthrie, who is the father of ASP.NET, kind of one of the founding technologies that is driving the web today. He's been a keynote speaker. You've seen him at MIX. You've seen him at PDC. He's been speaking here and around the world. Scott, welcome to MSDN Radio.
Great. Thanks for having me here.
We're excited to have you. The show is driven by the audience questions because it's a chance for you to go out and ask your questions. And if you have a question, just go ahead and type it into the Q&A panel, and then we'll get you the dial-in number, and you can then come on and chat with us. But what's going to be keeping you busy in the next 6 months?
It's been a busy last couple of months.
I bet you.
I've just shipped VS 2010 and .NET 4 and Silverlight 4 and have the preview of Silverlight for Windows Phone 7 along with the other tools out there. So the last couple of months have been busy. I've spent a lot of time traveling, talking about them, obviously working here, getting the products built. And, right now we're kind of in doing two things. One is, continuing to try to, talk to people about, how to take advantage of these things. And now that we've shipped them, what are the best practices? What are all the features even?
Mm-hmm.
And how can people best exploit them? And then, obviously also we're starting to work on the next version. And so we're doing lots of planning here trying to figure out exactly what all will be in the next release.
Well, that sounds like you've got a job ahead of you to try to, take each of these different releases and make sure that's got, what people are looking for. So I spend a lot of my time going around and trying to help people understand what's there, and I've done about 8 or 10 webcasts just on Visual Studio in the last month and a half, and even with that, there's just too much to talk about.
Yeah.
So when you think about the features inside of Visual Studio and everything that's been talked about, what are some of the hidden gems that people haven't heard about?
Well, I think, there's a huge number of new capabilities. Some of the ones that typically get demoed the most are, IntelliTrace or ASP.NET MVC2 or multi-monitor, or there's mm-hmm. Parallel extensions or SharePoint support, or just to name a few. So there's tons of kind of the big ticket ones that get demoed a lot. The thing I think I like the most about this release is the hundreds and thousands of kind of small features, the ones that are kind of sometimes get both a nice reaction and also kind of finally you did that kind of response. It might be, implicit line continuation in VB. It might be some of the new IntelliSense searching features. It might be consume-first IntelliSense for test-driven development within the editor. It might be, dump debugging support, which a lot of most people have never even probably don't even know what that is.
Dump debugging?
Yeah, so one of the things, and I'll probably hopefully blog about it either in the next week or so, is you can actually on a production system capture a dump trace of a process to disk. So you can instrument it on a web server, you can do it on a client machine, and then you can actually do file open inside Visual Studio and open up the dump. And you basically see where the process was at the point that you captured it. And so you can see all the stacks. You can see the thread information. You can basically see what all the variable state was. It's not interactive, so unlike, say, IntelliTrace, you can't step back in time.
Mm-hmm.
But you can actually see exactly the state of the program at the time that you captured it. And that works with all versions of Visual Studio, or Visual Studio Professional and above. And it provides a great way for debugging production systems and diagnosing problems when you have them, especially on server environments. So, yeah, I'll do a blog post on that. It's just one feature that probably 99% of people have never even heard of.
Mm-hmm.
But once you explain it to them, they're like, wow, that's pretty cool. That's a lot what I'm trying to do right now on my blog is I haven't been blogging necessarily about the big ticket features yet, like IntelliTrace and things like that. I've been mostly focused on here's these little gems that, you know, if you're using Visual Studio today, and once you see them, or you're using .NET or ASP.NET or Silverlight today or WPF today, and you see them, you kind of go, oh, that's so cool. I can use that immediately. And that's what I think is nice about this release is all those features that you can sort of say, oh, I can use that immediately. They don't require, you know, hours and hours of training. They don't require you to buy huge books to learn. There's, you know, really nice things that you can take advantage of immediately.
So, I mean, the whole idea with being able to get to the dump trace, if you get the error where it says send this information to Microsoft, that goes someplace, like to winqual@microsoft.com or something?
Yeah, I mean, typically when you say upload it to Microsoft, you're typically sending a subset of all the information. And we don't obviously have symbols for your application, so we can still determine a lot based on like what the type of crash was and where it was. And what we do when people upload crash dumps like that, and it's really been invaluable during the beta process and the RC process of Visual Studio, is, you know, we try to figure out, like, if a lot of things are, you know, we see a lot of reports of specific issues that all look like the same stack trace, we know we have a bad bug. You know, when we see onesie-twosies in certain places, typically we still have a bug, but we know, you know, we can actually measure, you know, what percentage of all the crashes have we fixed? And, you know, we typically look for, you know, try to get all of the top 10 crashes fixed. And that tends to have an enormous impact in terms of perceived reliability because typically the top 10 crashes account for about 98% of all crashes out there. But the dump debugging stuff, the cool thing is if you have your symbols, if you have your source code and you actually have symbols for your project, which you do if you have your source code, you can actually line up the dump debugging information with the symbols. And so instead of just looking at kind of, you know, a call stack with kind of goofy names, you can actually see the exact source code names and variable state within the dump. And, you know, so I'll probably walk through in a blog post, you know, how to diagnose a deadlock situation on the server. And, you know, we'll actually write a little app that'll cause a deadlock under load, create a load runner that'll put it in a deadlock situation, and then kind of walk through how you debug to figure out, okay, where's the line of code that has the problem. And it's pretty slick what you can do with it.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Well, one of the challenges with this show, especially today, is that I have to give up the floor, and there's people in the queue who have been waiting to ask you questions. So I'm going to go ahead and pull in. We've got Jesse in Minneapolis who's got a question. Jesse, you there?
Yes, I am.
How's it going, Jesse?
Great. Hey, it's a pleasure to speak with you, and thank you for the great blog posts and MVC and everything else.
Cool. I appreciate it, Jesse. Thanks.
Yep. So my question is, well, I just want to start off with a little phrase here. I have a lot of ideas, you know, like name routes, integrating Spark View Engine, you know, whether it be the syntax and the IntelliSense into Visual Studio, AutoMapper integration, and I have different questions as well, like, you know, when are you guys going to buy ReSharper? You're supposed to laugh there. Okay.
Yes.
So anyways, I have a lot of different thoughts, ideas, questions, so on and so forth. Aside from coming on this show, you know, how do I as a developer get these communicated to Microsoft?
Well, you can definitely always send me email. So my email address is scottgu@microsoft.com. So if you ever have a suggestion or a question, especially if it's a question you can't get answered elsewhere, always feel free to send me email. The one reason I try to do the blog and I do occasionally these sort of linked listing posts. I did one, I think, last Thursday. It's still probably up on at the top one of my blog site right now. Is try to also to point to people that have also done great content. So if you ever do also write a blog post about meme routes or Automapper or, you know, how to take advantage of SparkView, you know, send me a pointer to it, and I can either try to Twitter it, tweet a pointer to it, or potentially integrate into a link listing post to drive some traffic to it. And you know, I think part of what makes, you know, that I get a kick out of .NET is just the huge ecosystem and the huge community out there. And, so the more I can do to help point people at great content or ideas that you've done, the better.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, we've got some other questions in here, too. And we've got someone who's been on the line here from Bryan, Texas. Raj, are you there?
Yes, I am.
So what's your question, Roger?
Hey, Scott, I have a question on MVC, too, but before that, I have a quick question on the dump debugging that you talked about.
Sure.
We currently use WinDebug with the Son of Sam and the PSS Core 2 debugger extensions. Are you suggesting that Visual Studio would have something that's better than that? Or?
Yeah, it's a good question. So people that don't know, WinDebug is kind of a lower-level debugger interface that you can use to debug dump files today, and then there's sort of I think we call it SOS. It's not technically Son of Sam, that's the serial killer, but it is kind of a debugger extension that you can use to kind of get more information out of it. The Visual Studio support, the nice thing about the Visual Studio dump debug support is it's a little higher level, so it's a little easier to use for DBG, which has a bit of a learning curve. It's using the same capabilities, and one of the things a lot of people don't know, and I will include in the blog post, is you can actually load the SOS DLL within the interactive window of your debugger.
Okay.
And so you can actually directly from within the VS debugger actually do all the same types of things with SOS that you do with WinDBG. And it just ends up being sometimes a little bit more developer friendly, especially for bringing someone new on board. Being able to line it up with the source files and use the same watch window and stuff like that sometimes makes it easy. So I'll cover that in all the blog posts.
Okay. And a question on MVC 2: are there plans for MVC 3 for any kind of UI helper methods, say like a grid, like the MVC contrib grid, and also any kind of scaffolding support for IEnumerables?
Yeah, we're kind of working on MVC 3 right now. Certainly, you'll see more UI helpers show up in MVC 3. I don't know yet what the status is of the grid. Obviously, the MVC contrib project has a great grid control or grid component already, and so one of the things that we're trying to do is make sure that we don't just sort of duplicate features that people have already built for ASP.NET and MVC.
Okay.
Now, if enough people want it, then then often we do pull things into kind of the core MVC release itself. So I don't know yet about the grid, but you will definitely see more UI helpers. And your other question about MVC was, you had another one?
No, the scaffolding support for IEnumerables.
Yeah, you will definitely also see much richer scaffolding support in MVC 3 as well.
Okay.
That is something that we're looking at from a tooling perspective. You'll probably be able to just point to a model and actually scaffold the controller. Or when you create a controller, you can probably pick a model and auto-scaffold all the CRUD methods as well as the views for them as well. So you'll see much richer tooling support, I think, in MVC 3. Typically we're kind of executing on this kind of yearly cadence. So, you'll probably start to see MVC 3 previews start to show up in a few months' time.
Okay. And just one other thing, David Ebo had released that awesome T4 MVC template.
Yep.
Is that something that would be merged into MVC 3, or is that something you're looking at? Because we really love that, because we can avoid magic strings altogether with that T4 template.
Yeah, it's something that we're looking at. It sort of goes along with the sort of richer MVC tooling support. So it's something that we're definitely looking at. I mean, generally what we try to do with MVC is just toss ideas out there, see kind of what sticks with the community, and then kind of, you know, conservatively bake them into the core. And that way you have always a very stable core that we think is well-factored. And then by using this kind of yearly cadence, it keeps getting richer and richer. So that's something that we didn't think was ready to be baked into the core in MVC2, but it's certainly something that we're going to be looking at for MVC3.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks a bunch.
You know, the questions about MVC raises the, you know, do we do MVC or do you do web forms, and, you know, is one better than the other? That kind of brings up the religious discussion of VB versus C#.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have a feeling one way or the other, or are you still doing the just basic C?
Oh, you know, I think, you know, so a lot of these technology debates, I did a blog post, I think it was in January, on I think they call it a technical debate. It was sort of a different kind of blog post for me. But I basically wrote specifically around technology debates and MVC and web forms in particular as an example. And, you know, sometimes, you know, people are so passionate about their particular technologies that, we often sort of miss the bigger picture sometimes. So, you know, there's never kind of one right thing. You know, there's the one right thing for an individual or for a team, but there isn't necessarily the one right thing in the abstract. It's kind of my sense on technology debates. No one language is best, no one framework is best, no one tool is best. You know, it really does depend on the people using it. What we have tried to do, though, is for web forms and MVC, if you go to the ASP.NET website on the Getting Started tab or the Get Started tab, there's a nice sort of 5-minute video by Scott Hanselman that actually specifically talks about, you know, choosing your programming model. Do you do web forms? Do you do MVC? And, you know, talks about, you know, why you'd use one versus the other. And throughout is, you know, they each kind of value different things, and they each emphasize different things. And so, you know, if you're trying to decide, you can watch that video, and it provides a little bit of guidance as to which to choose. You know, we're continuing to invest heavily in both going forward. So it's not like you need to pick one versus the other. It really does come down to what comes most naturally. And if you go to the Get Started tab on www.asp.net, we try to provide some guidance in terms of which might feel the most natural to you.
Well, I think you're right on with that. And the other thing is that the technology seems like it's getting faster and better at allowing people to do stupid things more quickly.
Well, hopefully do good things as well, but yeah.
Hey, we've got another question here. This is from Scott in Minneapolis. Scott, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Mike. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Scott.
I'm the leader of the Serverlet User Group in Minneapolis, and I'm also a president of an entrepreneurship club here, so I'm always looking for new things that small tech startups should be paying attention to. And I see that there's a new Action Pack subscription that's coming out on May 24th called Design and Development Action Pack, and it includes VS 2010 Professional and Expression Web. But it doesn't include Blend, and I'm wondering if you could make an inquiry on behalf of the tech startups doing Serverlet to see if we can fix that.
Sure. You said it includes Visual Studio and what else?
And Expression Web.
Oh. Huh.
But it doesn't include Blend.
Okay. If you send me an email on that, I can follow up.
Okay.
To be honest, I didn't know about that. One thing you can do that, you know, I definitely recommend to people if they haven't checked it out is we do have two programs that you can join, one called Website Spark and one called Spark. The Website Spark program is available to anyone who builds websites on behalf of others. So if you are, you know, a consultant, a one-man shop, even if you're moonlighting on the side, and you're, you know, helping build web apps or websites for other companies or other individuals or organizations, you can enroll in the program. It does give you 3 copies of Visual Studio 2010 Professional. It gives you a copy of Expression Studio, including Blend. It includes 2 copies of Expression Web, and it includes production copies of Windows Server as well as SQL Server. that you can actually deploy and run on a hosted website or a web server on the web. And, so that is great for both ASP.NET and Silverlight development. It's a free program. You don't have to pay anything for 3 years. At the end of 3 years, you're not obligated to buy anything. You can just delete all the software and be done with it. Anyway, if you're interested, you go to websitespark.com and you can sign up. And basically, within about 5 minutes, you can download the software from MSDN. And then BizSpark is available for startups. So those are, and it's a similar program for 3 years, no obligation, and it works for a startup that's doing any type of entrepreneurship or anything. So those are two programs I definitely recommend if you haven't checked them out yet. And if you send me mail on the Action Pack subscription, I can try to follow up and understand why Blend isn't included as part of that.
Excellent. And I have actually checked out the Spark programs in detail. I talked to a lot of entrepreneurs about them. But if I can, I do have a Visual Studio question as well.
Sure.
I admit that my upgrade to Visual Studio 2010 is a week away, but one of the things I struggled with as a Silverlight developer in 2008 was the stack tracing. And with so much binding and notification, a lot of times your stack trace just has external code,
right,
and it's difficult to figure out what actually fired my event or my getter or my setter. And I'm curious to know if 2010 has better support for that stack tracing and binding to figure out some hints about, well, which external code was the one that called me.
Good question. I don't know off the top of my head whether Visual Studio 2010 itself makes that better. What we have tried to do with Silverlight 4, though, is we have a new we have a new XAML parser that we've introduced. It kicks in when you recompile your app for Silverlight 4. Just for compatibility reasons, we actually run existing compiled apps that were compiled against Silverlight 2 or 3 or 1, for that matter, with the old parser. The new parser does provide much more error diagnostic information. So, you know, if you have a runtime exception, say, for example, you're trying to load like a style resource or a brush or a template, or there's a binding error, you should get much more information about the file and line number where it occurs instead of kind of a generic XAML error or, you know, some of the messages today that just pinpoint you to line 1-1. And so that should help, I think, with what you're after in terms of pinpointing the error diagnostic information.
All right. Thank you very much.
And if you have a specific, you know, scenario that doesn't help you with, send me mail and I can put you in touch with the team and we can make sure we get that in for future releases.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, Scott. Yeah, with a lot of questions on how to solve, debug, and figure things out. You've been part of driving the test-driven development with the Visual Studio for a long time, Scott. I read somewhere that in, was it 2005, Visual Studio had 100,000 test cases and 500,000 scenarios?
I think that was just ASP.NET. Yeah, Visual Studio itself and .NET, I have no idea how many test cases we have right now. It's probably in the millions.
And it's just got to be growing exponentially as we continue to add stuff to it.
Yeah, it's, you know, that is in general, I'd say, you know, for each sort of product that I've ever been a part of, you know, typically the size of the product, you know, each time you add a zero at the end in terms of, you know, lines of code or number of customers or number of people working on the project, you know, your processes need to change just to scale to it. And so mm-hmm. you know, we're at a point now where, you know, Visual Studio is probably the largest client app in the world now, I'd say, by just the amount of stuff that runs in our process, the number of lines of code that run in our process. You know, Office mm-hmm. is, Office collectively is bigger, but, you know, each Office app is, you know, the Word and Excel are different processes. You know, Visual Studio and DevEng is probably by volume of code now the biggest client app in the world. So it is a daily challenge and adventure in terms of, you know, how do you deliver that thing, you know, regularly over, you know, the span of 10 years and try to make sure you have the right quality. And so, yeah, we've embraced certainly TDD and, you know, unit testing. I'll do a blog post on this shortly on, you know, from a tooling perspective, trying to make it easier and more friction-free for developers to take advantage of that within their own projects. And then obviously, you know, our entire test bed is fully automated.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the only way we could ship internally as well.
How much of what you see in the Team Foundation, the Team Suite of products, is stuff that we have evolved ourselves over time for taking care of this exact problem and challenge?
Yeah, I know. A lot of it is. Certainly the source control system is,
mm-hmm.
And the bug and work item tracking as well, but especially the source control system. You know, there's different people have different size projects, and, you know, oftentimes, you know, I'll talk with customers, and they'll say, you know, often very big customers, they'll say, hey, we've got, you know, 14 development teams spread out around the world. We've got, you know, millions of lines of code, you know, from across various projects. You know, how do I know that this thing is going to work? And, you know, it's nice to be able to stare, you know, people back in the eye and say, well, you know, we actually know it works because we've got a project that's 10 times, you know, that's even bigger than that, and it's our project. And, you know, if we have bugs or we have performance problems with TFS, it's going to bring down our entire, you know, system. So, it's been invaluable to find those bugs. You know, there's certain bugs you can only really find when you're really hitting it with a gigantic app or system.
Mm-hmm.
And source control with, you know, tens of millions of lines, it's hard to simulate all the different variations, whereas if you get 2,500 developers using it daily, checking out and in code and flowing, you know, code across different repositories and branches, that really kind of gives you kind of a battle hardening and lets you find those bugs. And, you know, likewise, I'd say, you know, one of the things that's been really nice about WPF 4 in .NET 4 is, you know, we rebuild all of Visual Studio with it, and likewise, you know, there's a bunch of new features in WPF 4, but I'd say the biggest thing that in this release is just having an app the size of Visual Studio pounding on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's lots of little kind of bugs and additional features that we've fixed and added to the product that just add kind of a level of polish and really solve some of those tough corner cases that you only find in a giant app like, you know, Visual Studio when you're building with it.
Yeah. Well, that's really dog-fooding our the product, and that's been around at the mantra at Microsoft, it seems like, for forever.
Yeah.
Hey, we got time for about one more question.
Sure.
And I've got Mark down in Fairfield, Iowa. Mark, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
How are you doing today?
Oh, doing well. Scott, first I want to thank you for your great website and for keeping us all posted on some of the new technologies coming down the pike.
Cool, thanks.
A couple weeks ago, one of the presenters hinted at a new version of Dynamic Data that's coming out soon. We're specifically interested in the ability for dynamic data to scaffold properties that are added to the data model that aren't in the EDMX. So a classic example is a computed field, say first name plus last name for full name. If you just add that in the data model right now, you know, it complains that it's not in the EDMX, and that's if you put it in the metadata side of the object. If you put it in the regular side of the object, dynamic data doesn't pick that up.
Okay.
And so I wonder if a feature like that's coming out. And also, you know, Dynamic Data Futures project came out a couple years ago, and I haven't seen a roadmap yet that maps some of the features in that to the new version of DD4 or, you know, to know how those things play together.
Yeah, no, so that's a good question. Issue me mail. I can find out about the specific case around the property exposing one that you suggested. So send
right.
me mail, and I'll loop you in with David Fowler, who's the developer who works on dynamic data, and he can definitely let you know. In terms of from a roadmap perspective, ASP.NET 4 includes a bunch of improvements to dynamic data, especially if you're using EDMX or a linked entity. So we support many-to-many. I think we have new entity templates and a variety of other great features. You shoot me mail in as part of that. I can loop you with David. He can give you the exact mapping of what was in Futures and what's now built directly into ASP.NET 4 and that specific question there. And I'll try to make a mental note to do a blog post on dynamic data sometime in the next couple of weeks as well to talk about all the new features, because there's a lot of great stuff that came out with 8-bit.NET 4 with dynamic data.
Excellent.
All right.
Now, one other quick question.
Sure.
Historically, how in the world did the Find engine in Visual Studio ever get decoupled from the regex engine that you code against? I know there it's a feature that they're talking about putting in the next version to have an option that you can use the regex engine to do your searches.
Yeah.
But I'm just curious what how that ever got disconnected in the first place.
Well, the history, the history is Visual Studio itself, I guess, is it's more than 10 years old now. It's probably coming up to 14 or 15 years old. Way back when was sort of the Visual Basic 5 IDE and the Visual C++, probably C++ 5 or 2, I don't even remember which one. They created a new shell, which became Visual Studio, kind of in the mid-90s. The Find engine, I think, dates from that point, that's pre-.NET, that's pre-having a regular expression engine and system.txt.regular expressions. And I think basically what's happened is just over time, they haven't updated the Find dialog to support the managed regular expression engine. So that is one thing that's missing there. There's something I'm probably going to blog a post later today, keep an eye on it, is a bunch of extensions that we've just shipped, like power extensions for VS 2010. And I don't remember whether there's improved Find support as part of it. There's like 20 pretty cool extensions with a lot of asks that people have had. There's a chance there might be a Find one in there. As part of writing the blog post, I usually learn a lot more about all this stuff, which is nice. So I'll play with that, and there's a chance that might be there. And I think there are some extensions from other people that do have regular expression support, and you will definitely see that show up in the future. And if you're looking for coding stuff or for searching code, also check out a blog post I did as part of my .NET 4 and VS 2010 series on, I think it's called Searching and Navigating Code. And with VS 2010, you can now do control comma to bring up the Navigate to dialog. And that lets you do camel case and Pascal case search expressions across your code. And so instead of grepping the source code, it's actually doing kind of a semantic analysis based on your code model. And it enables a whole bunch of tricks for finding code. Like I, since that feature showed up, I haven't actually used Find in my source code anymore, other than maybe searching for XML files or something. But definitely check out the search and navigate code feature if you haven't tried it out yet.
All right. Well, hey, Scott, the time trouble is with us is we've got too many questions and not enough time. But thank you, Mark, for your question. And, Scott, I want to thank you again for coming on to the show.
Cool. No, my pleasure. And thanks for everyone for joining.
We'd love to have you come back, and we'll try to get you on the schedule again.
Definitely. That'd be a lot of fun.
All right. Well, in the meantime, we do have a survey up on the web that you can click on and give us some feedback as to what you think we should do to be able to improve this show. Next week, we've got Steve Fox coming on from the SharePoint team. You can register for that one by going out to tinyurl.com/msdnradio-8. And then Mark Rasinovich will be on in 2 weeks, and that is tinyurl.com/msdnradio-9. And we'll look for your feedback, and thank you again. We'll see you next time on MSDN Radio.
Thanks again, everyone.
So that's it for this Monday. Go to msdnradio.com and click the registration link if you want to participate in the next show. Until then, happy coding.